On this episode of Adventures in Being Gifted,
every light bulb in the room went off. And they were like, we can think like that? You know, because I think even third graders are conditioned to give the right answer. So you get a question and you're to give the right answer and then you move on. And we often tell kids to think outside the box, and then we make them take assessments that everything has to be inside the box if you're going to count it. And so you have to give permission to kids to be able to think a little bit differently or to think of something in another way, because they're so conditioned, they're so trained in your regular ed classrooms to think for look for the correct answer. And so when I gave these kids permission to think of something else, they came up with all sorts of creative ideas.
That and a whole lot more coming up. In honor of Gifted, Talented, and Neurodiversity Week, we decided to add an extra episode.
We got to attend the OAGC conference last week here in Ohio from our Gifted State organization, and it was the 70th annual conference. The conference is for gifted teachers and coordinators just wanting to connect, learn, and network with each other.
We recorded a bunch of mini segments from keynote speakers, parent leaders, advocates, session speakers, members from the OAGC board, and several attending teachers. It's so worth listening to this episode because even if you're not from Ohio, you're going to learn a lot of valuable information about advocating for gifted children, gifted education, and even some new tips and tricks on how to work with gifted kids.
So enjoy some of these wonderful tidbits.
I'm Jonathan Plucker, a professor from Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, Maryland, although I live in Memphis, Tennessee. I'm a former K-12 teacher. I'm married to a teacher, and I am the father to two great kids. At the Community and Family Day, I talked about creativity, and the main point I tried to make was that helping children and students become more creative is really about attitude primarily, and getting them to appreciate the fact that they are creative no matter what anyone tells them, no matter what society tells them. And also that in that as parents and educators, it's really important for us to focus on encouraging that creativity, encouraging our children to take risks, knowing that they will often fail, but that failure is just grist for the mill to do better things moving forward. We don't need to be our children's biggest critics. We need to be their biggest champions and their best mentors. So we talked about things like mentoring, being that champion, being that advocate for students so that they know that trying to be creative is not only a good thing, that it's not a smooth path, but that's part of this journey. Creativity, innovation, entrepreneurship, we tend to talk about all three of those things together. They're important economically, they're important for financial well-being. But I also think that creativity, I've often described it to people as being the spice of life, really, in that could you go through life being minimally creative? You can, but I don't know why you would ever want to do that, right? And it just makes things more interesting. And even if it's small things that we can each do every day, if you drive the same way to work every day, drive a new way to work. If you make the same meals all the time, I think we all do that to save time. Make it a little bit differently. Make it with different ingredients. Put a little twist on it, and then see if your family notices. Right, and so it's important for us personally, but there's certainly a huge societal benefit to having more of our students exploring their creativity.
My name is Alyssa Luigi, and I am the president of the Lakota Leads Gifted Parent Advocacy Group for the Lakota School District. And I am a parent of two gifted high school girls, and I'm the sibling of a gifted sister who's a grown adult, and I've just been around gifted for quite a while, I guess. My first exposure to LEAD, so to speak, was back when my current senior was back in second grade and was identified gifted. And at that time, Lakota actually had no gifted services that year because we had a levy failure. And so they had removed gifted services since it's not a required service by state law, which is a whole other can of worms I won't get into right now. So I had questions about like what that meant and what do these test scores mean and things like that. And so I went to a LEADS event and asked some questions, and then kind of was involved on the periphery for a couple of years, and then was actually asked to kind of step right into the president role. So nothing like trial by fire. So a major way that I'm making a difference as a member of LEADS, I think, is to just be a resource and a connection for people in the community, because we don't know what we don't know up front is the challenge. And so to be able to be there, to be a resource to, when people have questions, and to be able to say things like, I don't know the answer, but let's find out together, or let me direct you to somebody who I think might know the answer, things like that, is to be a connecting resource for parents in the community. So one thing that I've learned through being a part of LEADS over the years is essentially that, well, you'll never know it all. Essentially, you're never going to, even when you feel like somebody's an expert, there's things are always changing. There always is more to learn. And that we're all just doing the best we can to be an advocate for our child and for the needs of those in the district. So I think a big reason that parents and students themselves, as they get older, should advocate for gifted support in education is because, unfortunately, I think there's this idea out there among a lot of people within education and just generally in life that, oh, these are smart kids, they'll be fine. That, you know, being intelligent makes things quote unquote easy or things like that. And that they don't understand that there's more to who a person is than just their intelligence, that there's things like your emotion intelligence and your ability to manage executive functioning, all of those kinds of things. And so it can be a challenge being a gifted learner and being the parent of a gifted learner. And so it's important that we know ourselves and we know our kids better than anybody else. And so we have to step up and speak out for them when needed. A lot of times our teachers are doing the best they can and they have to serve the needs of an entire classroom. And so sometimes it's stepping up and saying, this situation is not impacting my kid in the same way as a typical kid. So can we look at how to adjust or how to restructure something to help them be successful in a different way? For people who are maybe interested in starting a parent group or things like that, I think one of the biggest things is to try to find a way to connect with some other parents in your district, or even maybe outside of your district. If you're in a more rural area and your district isn't that big, you could look at maybe a countywide situation or things like that. So you can think outside the box a little bit, but just trying to find a kind of core group of people where you can start creating those connections. It's not as much about having all the answers or being knowing all the things. It's about creating those connections and those relationships among other parents to think, oh my gosh, I'm your kid too. I'm not only my kid is doing this. Or to be able to talk to somebody who's a couple years older than you and saying, oh, I didn't realize that this was going to be something I was going to have to think about as my 8-year-old gets into their teenage years or things like that. But just to try to start making those connections. is one of the biggest things that I can encourage people to do. You can talk to your gifted department at your school if you have one. If you don't have one, you can talk to maybe like your educational service center. But just any, whoever kind of for your district is in charge of reporting gifted numbers or any kind of gifted services might be able to provide a little bit of support too.
Wilson Fish. And I am here fulfilling so many roles. First and foremost, happy to be helping put on this conference again with an amazing team, making sure that every I is dotted, T is crossed, and I'm thrilled to have seen our vision come to fruition again. Great conference, and happy to be here and happy to reconnect with so many different gifted advocates throughout the state of Ohio. I've been in gifted education for about 28 years. Oh my goodness. Yes, and a very long time, and have seen the hard work that OAGC has done in Ohio many, many years. I met some of my closest gifted colleagues way back in the 80s. Yes, I'm dating myself even more, presenting next to them in the same rooms, and we are still together, advocating together and discussing together and asking questions together, because we're always looking for more and more answers as laws change and budgets change and the direction of gifted in our states. So I'm currently working with Shaker Heights Schools. Very excited to be there working with them. I've had the opportunity since I retired about 9 years ago to visit so many different school districts in Ohio, mostly in the eastern suburbs of Cleveland. And get to know the teachers, get to know the students, get to know the administration, and work with them to figure out how we can make gifted education the best it possibly can be in the school district.
I'm Heather Cardine. I am a gifted intervention specialist for the Dayton Public Schools District. I am also the Ohio Association for Gifted Children president. I live in Dayton, Ohio with my three children. They are fantastic. One of them is gifted, so that bodes well for what I do. And he was one of the main driving forces for me to choose to advocate for gifted children. In 2011, I became a gifted intervention specialist for the Dayton Public Schools District. About a year later, I decided that I wanted to be more involved in advocacy for my region, West Central Ohio, and also for the state. And so I joined OAGC as a representative for my region, Region 4. I did that for a couple years and then moved on to the secretary, which is a part of the executive board in addition to being on the board. And at the same time, I was also a representative for Region 4 in the coordinator division. And I was asked 2 years ago if I would be interested in becoming president-elect for OAGC. And it took me a minute because that's a lot of responsibility, but I feel strongly about what we do as an organization, and I feel strongly about gifted education, and I want to be that voice and that advocate for kids in our state. I was a gifted child myself. I was subject area accelerated in reading. I went to the above grade level for reading, and back then I don't believe we had gifted programming like we do now. I had my son, and he was identified as gifted young. He was reading by age 3, and I wasn't quite sure how to come at that. And so I became an advocate for him, and which prompted me to delve more deeply into gifted education and advocating for kids, because I have a gifted child at home. There are a couple of things parents can do to advocate for their gifted children. Not only can they provide opportunities at home for them to experience rich stimulation and those learning experiences, in their interest areas, but also support them in the areas in which they need help or support. Finding an ally in the educational system is helpful, whether that's in your school, a gifted teacher, gifted coordinator, or if you are in a smaller district, reach out to your educational service center for support. Another way parents can support their kids is provide opportunity to meet like-minded peers outside of the school. A lot of our gifted kids do not always have peers that like the same things they do, because gifted kids have those little quirks, and they need friends that also share same interests. Those can be summer programs or enrichment programs. You can reach out to your local affiliate to find opportunities. OAGC offers opportunities on our website for summer programming based on the region in which you live in that you can find at oagc.com. The Ohio Association for Gifted Children, OAGC, has been around for 70 years now. We were actually established before the National Association for Gifted Children. We have been leaders in gifted advocacy, and other states model their gifted organizations, state organizations, based on ours. So I encourage parents to also look at their state organization for gifted to find out more, or for advocacy resources and support.
Hello, everyone. I am Brittany Webb. This is my first year being a gifted intervention specialist with the city of Shaker Heights. I have taught math for 7 years prior to this year, and I am really enjoying the conference. I'm learning so much about my role within the district, as far as testing, as far as identification, acceleration. I've learned so much. I can't wait for the Teacher Academy in the spring, and I'm looking forward to continuing the attending the conference years to come.
Hi, my name is Kathy Frazier, and I'm from Orange High School. I also have a company called Touching the Future Today that advocates for gifted children. And every year I look forward to the OAGC Fall Conference and the Teacher Academy in the spring. It's so much fun to connect with new people and people that you've worked with in the past, and come home back to school with new ideas for the teachers and for the students.
So my name is Melissa Henshaw, and I am the assessment coordinator at the Center for Talent Development at Northwestern University. We are a not-for-profit prong of the School of Education and Social Policy. We serve students in the K-12 gifted and talent development space, both families, students, and their schools and educators. As the assessment director, I work mainly with our assessment programs and with our school and family services team, where we serve groups of educators through graduate courses or boot camps that we provide, through professional learning on site, either inside of their school or at conferences like we are at OAGC today. This is my fourth year being here at OAGC in some way, shape, or form, and we always love working here in Ohio with Ohio educators. We also provide gifted and talent development programs for students from kindergarten all the way through 12th grade, both weekends during the summer and online. So if you're looking for talent development opportunities for your student outside of school, definitely check us out at our website at CTD. Thank you. Today here in Ohio, we were speaking specifically about assessment, and some of the pieces of assessment that are most important to me are understanding that assessment has a toxic culture across our country, and trying to break down those barriers of being afraid of assessment or answer questions in terms of assessment literacy and data literacy that sometimes teachers don't always get professional learning on inside of their school systems. As it pertains to high achievers, however, we want to make sure that we aren't only spending our time in assessment wrapped up in identification and programming of students, but that we're actually learning to measure the effect of programs and are we stimulating growth inside of our students that we're serving inside of selective enrollment programs. Some really good questions, I think, for you to ask yourself as a gifted educator is, how do we determine the success of our program, and are our advanced learners growing, and how do we know that? And if the answer is, I don't know if they're growing, or I'm not sure how we measure that, then that's kind of the place for you to start your work in that arena. One of the topics that we talked about today is that in the assessment landscape right now, interim assessments are definitely ubiquitous. Most districts have some sort of interim benchmark assessment that they give more than one time of year to measure growth. And most of these interim assessments, their norms tell us a story about the average growth of students. What's interesting about the normative story that these data sets tell us is that our highest achievers are often our slowest growers across the nation. When we know that our highest achievers assimilate more quickly, learn more quickly, they have the ability to compact through information, they have the ability for us to telescope or shorten the length of duration for learning cycles for them, yet our data sets tell us they're the slowest growers. So those are some things I would encourage our gifted programs to look at and evaluate in terms of how are we moving the needle for our students and not rely on what are descriptive statistics to become a prescription for growth for our talented students inside of our programs. Another place where I would love for gifted and talented educators to think about in terms of assessment is what does the quality of your data look like? Are you getting good quality, robust data in order to make decisions? Some of the things that we talk about when we look at data sets is, are test conditions stable and are we collecting data where kids are bought in? Have we spent enough time with our staff and our students helping them understand what the assessment is, what it's measuring, and how we're going to use it on their behalf? Have we provided enough data literacy and assessment literacy professional learning for our teachers so that they are comfortable with the data sets that they have and that they're able to make good decisions based on that data? And then to me, one of the most important pieces of that is, are we helping them build instructional competencies around the data sets that we're providing for them? Some of those instructional competencies that are really important when we look at our data sets are, can we differentiate well in the classroom? Can we inform instruction? Are we able to use responsive planning to plan lessons for our students that are in front of us, not just based on the curriculum that's laid out in our guide? Can we provide intervention, implementation, grouping, constructs, student engagement? Can we drive depth of knowledge and rigor, which are all things that we want to get to, and our good data assessment sets can help us get there? One of the biggest pieces that we talk about in terms of informing instruction is learning readiness. And why does learning readiness matter? Oftentimes we hear the word ZPD, the zone of proximal development. That's that sweet spot where kids are ready to learn. But where that's also important is, how much differentiation can our teachers possibly manage inside of their classrooms? And so at CTD, we call that the zone of possible differentiation. How much differentiation do we expect from one teacher in one classroom in any given lesson? And that's important for us to understand student readiness to know what that expectation would look like for differentiation. Readiness also has a drastic impact on student growth. If we're not hitting students in their sweet spot, we're less likely to see the types of growth that we would want to stimulate in our students. And now more than ever, we see varied readiness even inside of our selective enrollment programs. All the students met the criteria to be there, but post-pandemic, we have a much greater spread of abilities and readiness inside of our classrooms, so we definitely want to ensure that we're measuring that well.
My name is Andrea Downs, and I'm from Circleville City Schools in Pickaway County, which is just south of Columbus. I've been a gifted parent for 24 years. I've been in gifted education for 19, and I've been coming to OAGC's fall conference for the majority of those 19 years. And the sessions and the speakers are very valuable, but I think most people would agree that the best part of this conference is networking, because oftentimes when you're in gifted education or a gifted parent, you feel like you're on an island. And so this is a place where you can network and make friends with people across the state. And I've already gotten some new Facebook friends and some contacts and all that. So that's always helpful to take back, says, and the networking.
My name is Todd Stanley. I'm the gifted coordinator at Pickerington Local Schools. I'm also sometimes known as the gifted guy. And I love coming to OAGC for many reasons. But one of the major reasons is not only do you hear some good strategies, but you get to talk to people who you don't normally get to talk to. Gifted land can be very lonely at times. There are some coordinators I talk to, they're the only person in their county that does gifted. So being able to have a conversation with somebody and to bounce ideas off of, I mean, we're in a collaborative profession. And so we want to be able to collaborate with, but there's not as many gifted teachers as there are math teachers or that there are social studies teachers. And so finding people to collaborate with can sometimes be quite a challenge. And at this conference, I think this is like maybe the 13th or 14th year in a row I've presented. And so it's always nice to share some of the things that we're doing, and then I get to see other people doing it as well. So for instance, this year I had a session on talent development. And talent development is, you know, the elephant in the room with talent development is that we are under-identifying minorities and economically disadvantaged kids, and we're over-identifying white kids. And that's just been known for years. There's lots of data that supports that, but you don't need the data. You just need to walk into a room, a gifted classroom, and see that there's way more white kids than anything else. And so the idea, though, is that your gifted classroom should be representative of your student population. So if you have 35% minorities in your population, your gifted classroom should have 35% minorities in it. And that's just not the case. And so the question becomes, how do we know those kids are gifted. And so how do we identify those kids not using the things we are, you know, we already have identifying tools, but obviously those are missing some of those kids. So what are other ways that we can do that? So we decided at Pickerington to start a talent development program. We started at the third grade, and the idea was that we were going to take kids that were almost gifted, we call it, and they had like a 121 rather than the 126 they needed to be cognitively gifted. And we put them, it's not gifted programming, but we gave them opportunities for enrichment to put them in situations where they got to think when normally they wouldn't. And I'll share this anecdote. So I wasn't going to do this unless I was part of the process. So I actually, we have 7 elementary buildings, and I said to one of the teachers, I'm taking your classes. I'm going to teach 3 days a week, half an hour each day, and I'm going to roll this curriculum out myself so I can see what it's like and also work with the kids. And so, because I'm not going to tell people what to do, I want to make sure that I'm doing it as well, and then we can talk about it. And so one of the first days I was talking to the kids, and I took a nearby object, which was a dry erase marker eraser that was on the board. And I held up the eraser and I said, what can this be used for? And one kid raised his hand, and I said, okay, what can it be? He goes, you can erase dry erase markers. I'm like, you're absolutely correct. That's something that eraser could be used for. But what else could this be used for? And kid raised his hand, another kid raised his hand, and she said, you could use it to erase blue dry erase marker. And I was like, that okay, that's correct as well. But what else? Let's dig a little bit deeper. What else? And a kid raised his hand, and I said, if you're talking about red marker, go ahead and put your hand down. And he put his hand down. And I said to the class, I said, what if this eraser could be used as a dining room table for mice? And, you know, one thing that we crave as teachers is that aha moment, that moment when the light bulb, literally you can see it clicking above the kid's head. And I had a whole room full that when I said, hey, you could use this as a dining room table for mice, every light bulb in the room went off. And they were like, we can think like that? You know, because I think even third graders are conditioned to give the right answer. So you get a question and you're to give the right answer, and then you move on. And we often tell kids to think outside the box, and then we make them take assessments that everything has to be inside the box if you're going to count it. And so you have to give permission to kids to be able to think a little bit differently or to think of something in another way, because they're so conditioned, they're so trained in your regular ed classrooms, not all, but a lot, to think for look for the correct answer. And so when I gave these kids permission to think of something else, they came up with all sorts of creative ideas. And so, and that's what the program is designed to do, is to get kids to think a little bit differently. They have the ability to do that, but they just don't have permission. And so talent development does that. It gives them permission to be able to think a little bit differently and to access some of the gifts that they have that so far have been, I wouldn't say quashed, but have been definitely suppressed by the way that regular classrooms are run.
I'm Del Sigley. I'm a professor at the University of Connecticut. I direct the Renzulli Center, which is an internationally known center on gifted education. And I'm also fortunate enough to also direct the National Center for Research on Gifted Education. We're the only nationally funded center by the federal government, and we do research in the area of gifted education. It was great to be here in Ohio at your State Gifted Conference. These State Gifted Conferences are so important. In fact, some of the State Gifted Conferences draw almost as many people as the National Conference. And of course, the National Conference is important too. It's National Association for Gifted Children, NAJC. So today I talked about the importance of recognizing student strengths. One of my mantras is that we all should be talent scouts rather than deficit detectives. And a lot of times in education, we fall into this rut of becoming a deficit detective. We see things that kids can't do, and basically we place an emphasis on that. And sometimes there'll be students, for example, whose English isn't standard. And so as a result, we might say, well, that English is not very good. We can't place that kid in a gifted program. Or maybe a student has some discipline problems, and so those discipline problems draw our attention, and we fail to recognize the strengths. So it's very important as parents and educators that we should be talent scouts, and we should be recognizing the unique skills our children have and developing them. As I mentioned in our talk today, you know, if your partner were someone who pointed out to you everything you did wrong all the time or all of your weaknesses, you would certainly be thinking about getting another partner. And yet that unfortunately happens to kids in school often. You know, as educators, we're worried about these deficits that kids have, these things that they don't do well, and we try to remediate them. But a big part of education should be figuring out what students do well, what those students' talents are, and providing services to increase those talents and develop them further. So that's the beauty of gifted education. You know, special education is kind of a deficit model if you think about it, because they're trying to remediate kids. But in gifted ed, we should not be following that model at all. We should be following a model of strength-based. And while we do want to take care of some of the issues that students might have, some learning issues, what's really important is determining what the talent is and developing it. It's sort of like getting a Christmas gift or a holiday gift and opening the gift and then throwing away the gift and keeping the wrapping paper, I say. You know, kids come to our attention because of their gifts. So what we should be doing then is developing those gifts, and that's really very important.
Loved hearing from this array of guests here from the OAGC conference, and we really appreciated hearing all the latest and greatest gifted practices from the experts in the field, such as these talent development programs that are happening across Ohio and our country, what's new with assessments and creativity.
We found out so much new information. We were able to network with people. We got to meet new people. It was just a whole bunch of fun, and it was well worth our time. And we're so excited that we were able to capture it. For those of you who weren't able to be there, either because you weren't able to take time off of school or because you live in a totally different state. And we would love for you listeners to find your state's gifted organization and get involved. check it out, Google it, find out where and how you can meet or tune in. Like maybe they might have a virtual parent or community day just like OAGC does each year. And it's just such a wonderful way to feel connected and not feel alone in this journey of raising these gifted kids.
Yeah. So we have had an awesome season 3 and we are wrapping it up. We are so glad you have joined us as listeners this season.
And we want to invite you listeners to email through our website, adventuresinbeinggifted.com, to tell us what you want to hear about in season 4, which will air in January 2023. Thanks for listening
to Adventures in Being Gifted.
See you next season.